In the early days of the war against Nazi Germany, five young journalists with ambition, guts, and absolute conviction to bring the war home for American readers forever changed their lives, the course of journalism, and how history would remember the struggle against Adolf Hitler. In the new book, Assignment to Hell, The War Against Nazi Germany, with correspondents Walter Cronkite, Andy Rooney, A.J. Liebling, Homer Biggert, and Hal Boyle. Timothy Gay writes a vivid and moving and well-researched tribute to those five men and the countless American soldiers who risked their lives to bring the front lines to the headlines. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Timothy Gay to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Joe, my pleasure. Thanks so much.
What brought you to these five men in particular?
Andy Rooney did. I had the pleasure of interviewing Mr. Rooney a couple of times before he left us last fall. And Andy, in both his memoir, My War, which is wonderful, if you haven't read it, you need to. It's just a beautiful tribute to the World War II generation. But he expressed his great admiration for not only his great friend Cronkite, with whom he covered the bombing war in the early days of being assigned to London, but also Homer Biggert, another bombing war veteran, Hal Boyle, and the great Joe Liebling of The New Yorker. Liebling, Boyle, and Rooney were all together in the First Army's great sweep across France after Normandy, and Rooney learned a great deal from those guys, just as he had learned a great deal from Cronkite and Biggert earlier in the war.
It's hard not to make the leap, if you will, of these five men have this coverage of the war in common and went on later to be such great journalists, of what a formative experience that was.
It's not a coincidence, Joe. I think World War II was such a profound and searing experience for these guys that they came back to the States determined to make journalism something it had not been before the war, which was a reliable, consistent, important part of American democracy. Liebling, you know, went to The New Yorker, became a very noted critic of the American press. Cronkite and Rooney go to CBS and completely transform what broadcast and later television journalism was all about. Homer Biggert becomes a legendary newspaper man, wins a second Pulitzer in the 1950s for his coverage of Korea, and also covers everything from international disputes to the U.S. Civil Rights Movement, and makes just an incredible impact on everything he does. Hal Boyle becomes one of the most popular columnists in the country in the 1950s, 60s, and up to his death in 1974. All of them were determined to make journalism an honorable and important profession, and to a remarkable degree in post-war America, they succeeded, at least for a time.
What is also fascinating is that they all have various resumes, of course, but going into the war, none of them were seasoned. They were all, as you say, a flimsy resume in most cases for these five men.
Oh, that's absolutely true. The only one who had any degree of kind of foreign policy coverage was Joe Liebling, and only because he happened to be a rich kid and had studied at the Sorbonne and had been fascinated by everything French and everything European earlier in life. The other four were completely wet behind the ears. Cronkite, Boyle, Rooney, and Biggert had never been outside the U.S., had never covered any kind of foreign conflict or war, and they basically invented themselves and invented war correspondence as they went along from 1942 on. It's just absolutely remarkable to think of these gumshoe reporters, or in Andy Rooney's case, a kid out of college, drafted out of his junior year at Colgate, completely unfamiliar with journalism, and they defined what brilliant war correspondence was all about and made just incredible contributions to journalism.
In fact, how Andy Rooney got to Stars and Stripes is an interesting story.
Oh, it sure is, Joe. He was with the 17th Field Artillery, and they went to England very early on in the summer of 1942, And Rooney, I know this will come as a shock to you since you're an Albany guy, but Andy Rooney could be kind of lippy as a young kid, Joe.
Yeah.
And he managed to tick off more than his share of commanders, one of whom came away from a conversation with Andy convinced he was a communist or at least some kind of subversive. But Andy was lucky. A kindly lieutenant saw Andy's writing skill, saw the contributions he was making to the brigade newsletter and other writing assignments he was given. And when the word came from London that they were looking for anyone with a journalism background to help staff the brand new Stars and Stripes, he showed it to Andy, and they did what a lot of 22-year-olds did, due to resumes. They kind of buffed it up a little bit, embellished some things, took some fairly modest stuff he had done in college and made it out to be big-time journalism. And Andy got a job with one of the great, as I say in the book, accidentally magnificent institutions of World War II, Stars and Stripes.
And give us a sense of where the other four men landed, of who they were reporting for.
Cronkite wrote for United Press, so he was a wire service guy, came from Kansas City, basically, just a street crime and fire, you know, reporter. Again, no kind of foreign experience. The same with Hal Boyle. Hal was Cronkite's great friend and rival in Kansas City. Boyle wrote for the Associated Press. Homer Biggert wrote for the New York Herald Tribune, but he had just been on the city desk at the Tribune, had never really shown any kind of aptitude for bigger story other than sort of metro stories. And Joe Liebling, of course, had written for The New Yorker for a number of years, but again, not really on the foreign beat that much.
And their interactions is fascinating, of how they were at different places, at different bombings, at different points where they were together and covering the same story. And that really shows the differences and the similarities of these men.
Joe, it sure does. They were a journalistic band of brothers in many ways. Cronkite, Rooney, and Biggert were together almost every day for about 6 months, covering the Mighty Eighth, the U.S. Eighth Army Air Force, and its bombing campaign against the Third Reich. And those three were among the handful of reporters trained by the 8th Army Air Force to go along on combat missions. And on February 26th, 1943, those three guys flew against the Nazi U-boat pens at Wilhelmshaven. All three in B-17s, all survived, of course, but tragically their colleague, Robert Perkins Post of the New York Times, was killed on that mission. Later, as I said, in the war, Boyle and Liebling and Rooney were all credentialed to cover the First Army in the great sweep across France. Earlier in 43 and 44, Boyle, the AP reporter, Homer Biggert, the Herald Tribune reporter, were together in both Sicily and Italy and living in tents in the toughest possible conditions. The march north in Italy is one of World War II's really depressing and bloody moments, and Boyle and Biggert covered every inch of it.
I had the great fortune of interviewing both Walter Cronkite and Andy Rooney before their passing, and one of the things that struck me, especially with Cronkite, although with Rooney as well, and this comes through very clear in this book, was because I almost got chills when Cronkite was telling me the importance he felt in what he was doing, that the coverage, that there were people at home whose sons were there, and that he was telling them what was going on and in giving them their only communication, and what great importance that took on for these men. And that's fascinating.
It is fascinating, and it's absolutely right. As I say in the epilogue to the book, if Cronkite truly became the most trusted man in America, it's because he had seen young Americans at their absolute best, and in his own mortal way, he tried to live up to those qualities. If you just stop and think what it was like to cover these bomber boys every day, these kids barely out of their teens, knowing that they were flying combat missions against heavily fortified German positions. This early in the war, without fighter escorts, with very little knowledge of how to evade flak and all the rest. As Andy Rooney put it, it was like playing Russian roulette with a six-shooter. Sooner or later, your time was going to come. Very few of those boys survived the 25 missions they would need to, be rotated back home. Three-fourths of the American airmen who flew against Nazi Germany in 1943 and the first half of 1944, leading up to D-Day, became casualties of one kind or another. Walter Cronkite and Homer Bickert and Andy Rooney saw this extraordinary sacrifice day after day, and they felt a great moral obligation to capture it accurately. And it was the only, for a long time, the bombing campaign against Hitler was our only real action against Germany in Europe, and just tens of millions of readers hung on every word that Cronkite, Rooney, and Bickert wrote.
While their job was so important, you do write in the book about how there was fun to be had as well, especially with Cronkite trying to pursue Clark Gable and Andy Rooney trying to pursue Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, that's one of the great things I unearthed. I mean, we look at the World War II generation, the greatest generation, and we think that kind of celebrity consciousness would be beneath them, but it wasn't. I mean, Cronkite stalked Gable like paparazzi stalks, Brad Pitt these days. I mean, he deliberately made it, he tried to run into Gable at the two air bases that Gable was stationed at with the 8th Army Air Force, got an exclusive interview with him early on, and then tried very hard to sort of stay on Gable's tail as best he could. Stewart was much tougher for Rooney to get to, but eventually during the medal ceremony, Stewart loosened up a little bit and allowed Rooney and other press guys to interview him. But it's absolutely extraordinary that two of the most popular actors of the day, Clark Gable, earned an air medal as an air gunner for flying five missions over the Reich. Jimmy Stewart is an absolute American hero. Survived a couple dozen combat missions, became a very senior strategist in the 8th Army Air Force, and when his former unit was sort of torn to ribbons over Germany and we lost an extraordinary number of aircraft and men, Stewart was brought back to counsel the men psychologically and did an extraordinary job with that. I had very little awareness of what Stewart and Gable meant to those guys.
And following the war, of course, Rooney and Cronkite worked together at CBS, as you mentioned earlier and we discussed. But these men would stay in touch with each other and others who were involved. There was a brotherhood.
Yeah, there sure was. And there are a couple of photographs in the book that demonstrate that they would have reunions quite often. There were reunions of the Writing 69th, the fraternity of guys trained by the 8th Army Air Force to go on combat missions. They would get together fairly regularly. So would Liebling and Boyle and others. They would usually meet at Blake's, which was the saloon on the ground floor of the old Trib, and get together and reminisce. And they understood that World War II had been the great adventure of their lives, and they were very proud for the country contributions they had made to it.
It is a fascinating book and a wonderful story of these five men. The name of the book is Assignment to Hell. It is published by New American Library and Caliber Books. Timothy Gay, I thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Joe, it's been my pleasure.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Assignment to Hell, The War Against Nazi Germany, with correspondents Walter Cronkite, Andy Rooney, A.J. Liebling, Homer Bickert, and Hal Boyle. The book is published by NAL. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.